Welcome to Windows into Eternity with Almeen. This hour you will receive powerful revelations of a world where mystery and miracles are commonplace. Here's your host, Almeen.
Welcome to our show. We are so happy to be with you today. And I am going to ask Rogier if he will get some good questions ready for us. I saw that he had a stack of paperwork on his desk with your questions on it, so I'm sure that we'll be answering things that you want to know. Rogier, welcome with us and thank you, and please start right in.
All right. Well, the last episode, we started with the anatomy, the 20 Mayan tribes, and how they relate to the hands and the feet, or actually the fingers and the toes. And we've done the left foot, I believe.
Yes.
We covered the left foot, and I thought we would start with the right foot today, the symbolism.
Yes,
of course,
let's do that. The reason that it's important, my beloved brothers and sisters out there, it's not so much that you might, you know, need this in the future in just particular to one toe, but it teaches eternal principles because it teaches relationships between the concepts. The Maya didn't spell it out for us, but they gave us key words related to the frequencies of the 10 tribes that are mapped out by our fingers and toes. So let's take a look at that. On the right foot, we'll start with the big toe. If you have tingling in that toe, for those of you that didn't tune into our last week's radio broadcast, what we were talking about is the fact that if we listen to the whispers of the mirrors in our environment, we don't have to have the hard knocks. And so I explained to them how my left big toe is about perspective and vision. And whenever I'm asking questions about cosmic issues that I want to take to Mother, say, Mother, what about this, what about that, if I don't get the perspective right, because it could be that I see something happening in America, but it could be indicative of something happening on Earth or in the cosmos, or in fact something within Mother that's being mirrored without, that needs to be looked at. So those perspectives might be different. Then the toe tingles, you see, on top of the toe. Just slightly, because I heed the whispers. If it didn't, then I'd have to bump the toe or cut the toe. And, you know, we don't, or if I have something fester on a toe, if it's a regular thing, and we don't want to go that route. So heeding the whispers is very important. To heed them, we need to understand their language. So we've given a very comprehensive section in the book Secrets of the Hidden Realms, and I believe also as an appendix perhaps to the Ring of Truth. And so this is part of the information on anatomy. We've got more about anatomy and its language that it speaks to us that isn't in Secrets of the Hidden Realms, and quite a large portion on that as well, and that is in A Life of Miracles. So let us take a look at what indications on your fingers or hands, and remember, it doesn't have to be yours. We gave the example last week of driving past the billboard and seeing somebody with their left index finger up in the air with a little string around it, which is, you know, the sign of I need to remind myself to call this advertiser or whatever. The finger sticking up with the string, if it catches your eye, that is reminding you the left index finger is play and childlike innocence. It reminds you it's time to play. We can't stifle the inner child and expect our life to go smoothly. So, okay, let's take a look at the right foot, big toe, serpent. And it deals with life force, with instinct, and it deals with survival. Life force and instinct and survival. There is a saying for Toltec warriors as part of their training as warriors against illusion, that when against overwhelming odds, you focus on the details. It also says that when you are in overwhelming odds, when presented with that which you cannot hope to understand, then you surrender to the battle. This ties in with the concept behind survival, life force, and instinct. The instinctual center is in the life force area of the solar plexus. Now, life force used to be centered in the belly button. It's moved up to the heart as of May, as a center, as of May 2007. But the gut instinct, where life force takes over and fights the battle for you, where it runs your life. If you take a look at the surfer or the snowboarder or a magnificent skier, there is very little cognition involved. They have totally surrendered to instinct. The skier becomes one with the mountain. The surfer becomes one with the wave. You know, for an instinctual dancer, she becomes one with the drum or the music. And so there's no cognition. It just takes over. And so survival, life force, and instinct. So my brothers and sisters, when this is signaling you, it's time to surrender to the battle. It's time to let life carry you. It's time when you can no longer rely on mind for survival, and I mean by survival the ability to flourish when there seems to be some confusion or adversity around you. Surrender to the battle. And now, if we go second toe in, the toe is the frequency actually of World Bridger. It's an equalizer, death, and opportunity. This is signaling you that the door is closing. When a door closes, another door opens. Now, why is that an equalizer? Because there usually is a moment in between of faith. That moment in between gives you the chance to rewrite your script of life. And what I mean by that is as follows. If a door closes, there's a death in your family, there's a loss of a loved one, there's a divorce, there's a child that leaves your home in anger, or whatever it is, it's the closing of a door. There is a moment of introspection needed. That moment could be a month. But there's a moment of introspection when there's equalizer. The old pattern has disintegrated. The new pattern has not yet formed. On the back of one of my books, I think it is Journey to the Heart of God, I have an endorsement that's very precious to me. And, you know, people ask me why there's endorsements from statesmen and scientists and, you know, little tribal leaders like the Bushman tribe and so on. Why are they so eclectic? Well, those are friends. There are people who know me. And there are people that are willing to put their reputation on the line to say that they endorse the work that I do. So, you know, when I see their names on the back of my book, it makes me smile because I remember happy moments that, you know, we were able to talk about deep things and so on. So, my brothers and sisters, one of those is Baba, who is Delaria Festus is his name, and he is the wisdom keeper of the Sun Bushman tribe. He was with me when I was with their little shaman, if you will, named Isak. And I was talking about a door that had closed. And Isak said to me, he was doing divination on the ground, sitting squatting in the sand with his bare feet, and he threw his peach pips, which is what he does. And he said to me, when a door closes, another one opens. And he said, can you now do that you couldn't do before? And it really was such profound wisdom. in the middle of the Karoo bushveld in southern Africa, sitting flat in the dust with Isaac and Baba Festus. And that is exactly what this is about. The opportunity will be there when death has taken place because they go hand in hand. The equalizer is the moment in between. There is a moment of equilibrium in the cosmos, my brothers and sisters, when one pole has stopped pulsing and another pole hasn't taken over. Equilibrium is not to be indulged in constantly. Balance is dynamic. Equilibrium, instead, is a moment of equalizing. And if it's indulged in too long, it becomes stagnation. But when something closes, see if a higher pattern can be developed as a result of that death of a relationship or whatever, a job perhaps, whatever it is. And so that is the second toe in. I actually don't want to go into the third toe. We'll just take a little break real quickly. We're 2 minutes early, but let's go ahead and do that, and then we'll tackle that when I get back.
In this, the fourth book, The Ring of Truth, which chronicles Almeen's journey, she tells of the promise and the potential inherent in the resurgence of the feminine principle, increasingly felt in all aspects of current human experience. The operation of new laws governing the cosmos are explained together with the reasons for their creation. We are introduced to Mother, the primal creative energy that pervades every aspect of existence. We learn of her love and her laws and how to incorporate them into every thought and act. We are given samples of her divine language, its meaning, and its power. Mother's great gift to humanity, the healing power of Belvaspada, is revealed. This new approach to dissolving disease of mind, spirit, and body replaces previously existing methodologies. Application of its techniques removes old barriers of physically oriented existence and opens a broad pathway to a life of joy and fulfillment. Discover Mother and the Ring of Truth, as well as all of Almeen's books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
The Gift of the Unicorns is now available from Almeen. The magical book answers the question, do mystical creatures like the winged horse Pegasus, mermaids, and giants truly exist? What is their roles, and how can they be called upon for assistance? In their own words, the unicorns reveal where they went during the ages of darkness, their heroism in preserving purity and innocence, their golden shoes, and the secret mission they undertook for the mother of all creation. Receive your copy of this amazing book of sacred secrets, The Gift of the Unicorns. Go to www.spiritualjourneys.com or call 502-499-0016 today.
Well, Rahir, was there questions about what I've said so far?
No, not really. Please proceed.
Okay, then let's go to the third toe in. If you have any dreams about it, any indications about it, and so on, we're dealing then with the frequency that deals with hand, actually. It's the symbol for it, and it's nose, accomplishment, giving, and receiving. Sometimes that toe tingles for me if it is something that I'm not allowing for myself. The giving and receiving also has to be a self-made effort. In other words, if I'm not taking time to receive self-nurturing from myself, or if I'm not giving myself enough credence, say with my, let's say that I have an idea and I think, oh no, so-and-so knows better because they're the expert. We're in the seat of genius, my brothers and sisters, when ideas come in the place of silence, and it is as valid as that of an expert. So when that happens, I'm not giving myself enough credit, for example. It also might mean that there is something before you that you need to give to or receive from. So this has to do with giving and receiving. But it also has to do with accomplishment and knowing. The two very large recognitions there that we have to make is that accomplishment has to, you have to give yourself credit for accomplishment. People think that it isn't humble to give yourself credit for accomplishment, and that is because they really don't understand accomplishment well. Accomplishment is something that you have overcome within. The greatest accomplishments are, in fact, within. The greatest courage is moral courage versus physical courage. And those things are generally unacclaimed and unseen. So look at your accomplishments. Look at the bravery that it takes you to overcome some phobia in your life. One baby step at a time. Don't plunge yourself into something that you're not ready for, but one baby step at a time. And so, my brothers and sisters, if the Toltec seers say that if you do not give yourself credit for accomplishments along the way, that the journey can get very overwhelming, because most of our victories are unseen. And if we don't give ourselves some credit for it, they don't increase. Because to give gratitude and credit for something makes it increase. And secondly, people mostly don't see those victories. And in the physical realm, accomplishments are a little harder to come by, but they're not easier inside, but they're more able to be done moment by moment. And so those things are not generally acknowledged. Without acknowledgement, any part of life tends to wither and die. So they are adamant that you give yourself accomplishment. If we take a look at humility, most people think humility is not to put yourself forward, not to allow yourself to overpower others, hang back, stay in the background. My brothers and sisters, this is false humility. It absolutely is not accurate and true. Humility means that you acknowledge that in the grand scheme of things, every life has value. And the second part of humility is that you know nothing. Because from the vantage point from which we are, the vast majority of the cosmos and the plans and every new moment and every new person in front of us is totally unknown. So from this viewpoint, we can know hardly anything, assuming that we're just going with our ordinary tools. So my brothers and sisters, to acknowledge that, that is humility. But to think of yourself as having to give less than your best, help evolve all life within the interconnectedness of all things, is to serve life poorly. And secondly, to think that humility is to be less than another because they're more accomplished, because they know more, etc. We have knowing here as part of it. The point is just what I made before. You can know all things that you need to know the moment you need to know them. You may not have the technical language that's been developed by people. That's just to pacify reason or to create a communication bridge between people. My brothers and sisters, you may see the same principles they do, but in symbols. You may see it in images. You may hear, with me, how it usually is that I don't have the language for the scientist that I get plunged into, and I usually feel rather exposed until I realize I wouldn't be plunged here if I didn't have the knowledge. But the knowledge might come out in the form of a simplistic story. And if a scientist is humble enough, they can learn from it. But they would have to put it in their language for them to understand. Mostly they just miss it, but then I have wonderful scientists in my classes. And we teach each other. They give me the language with which to speak those things. The knowing is yours. You don't have to give credit to another because they have all the degrees or all the experience. You can have the perfect fresh insight that's for the next moment, even though they've lived with expertise all the moments before. And so humility does not mean to make yourself less and make another more by putting them on a pedestal. That is simply to pay homage to another's arrogance. So my brothers and sisters, that's how knowingness, accomplishments, giving and receiving fit hand in hand. So let's take a look at the toe right next to the pinky toe. It's elegance, art, self-expression. My brothers and sisters, I have always been fascinated by the geisha that was developed in Japan to provide companionship and conversation to people that have taken the time, to males that took the time, to develop their own skills. And they often found that in developing their own intelligence, their own worldly experience, because of the shelteredness of the women in the ages gone by, that there was not an area where they could discuss it in a non-competitive fashion, because men tend to have, at the same business level, a wall up to not expose their vulnerability, for instance, areas they don't know. Geishas were created for elegance, art, and self-expression in the following way. They allowed others to express during the time that that was their persona. They were listeners. They had great skills in the arts. These were not meant to be prostitutes. That is a misunderstanding. They provided highly skilled abilities of elegance, but they were living works of art. Every movement was a dance. The speech was exquisite. That doesn't mean that they didn't have a life of their own on the background. Perhaps they did. Perhaps this principle was overemphasized. But the principle is sound, and that is that our life should be lived as a living work of art. What I mean by it is this. We don't just grab a hamburger. Okay, if we are eating hamburgers, and that's the route one chooses to go, take the hamburger. Find a beautiful spot in a park. Don't just stuff it in your stomach while you're driving. The stomach muscles are tight. It causes hiatal hernias. It causes indigestion. When you indigest your food, it causes food allergies, and so on. My brothers and sisters, take the time to honor the food. Make a corner in a busy city, on a park bench. Spread a little cloth that you carry in your glove compartment that makes you feel homey on the ground. Sit there and put your sandwiches out. The point is, any simple gesture can be gilded by a little bit of elegance and a little bit of honoring of the moment. It's again, to go back to the Japanese customs, like the Japanese tea ceremony. When we have tea, we're eating and we're drinking tea simultaneously. The Japanese tea ceremony, every gesture is deliberate. Every gesture is an honoring of some part of the preciousness of sharing the ceremony with somebody you want to honor. There's the tea cup. Has a design in the bottom of the cup. So you take a moment to study and internalize how the design in the cup feels. How will it affect the tea that has been poured over it? You observe the time that's been taken with this cup. You taste your tea. It's a moment between you and the tea. There isn't conversation going on. You don't eat a cookie at the same time or whatever it is you're eating with it. You eat nothing. This is not about any other action. It's you and the tea. Deliberate gestures like that can also be seen in the Hollywood movies when there were screen sirens and greater-than-life heroes. My brothers and sisters, every leg that was crossed in those days, everybody lit their cigarettes before they knew it was causing lung cancer. Every match that was struck or lighter that was made was a work of art. When people went out their doors, they wore hats and women wore lipstick and they wore... Okay, we've come a long way since that. I understand. But it is the principle of it, that living can be done deliberately. It gives potency to the person. It heightens the sexual appeal of that potency for that person. And in addition to that, it honors life. Of course, there's the times for the spontaneity. But even the spontaneity is done in elegance. Why? Because whether you dance in your sitting room, whether you throw open your windows and you sing out there, or whether you're in nature, nature is supremely elegant, and the wild archetype within you likewise. Let us take a look at the pinky toe, which is universal water, purification, and flow. The fluidity that we have often discussed as being the hallmark of a master has a huge importance to it, my brothers and sisters, because there are dominoes that fall over in terms of understanding once you have the attribute of fluidity, which is what this pinky will signal you. If you're not fluid with things in your environment, you will get signals on the pinky toe of the right foot. So, fluidity. When we have fluidity, there is constant automatic purification, because fluidity is new every moment. Let's take a look at what needs to be purified. Density. We've had long discussions on some of our other shows about what density is, and the density that we are looking at in terms of fluidity healing is old stagnant patterns. We've identified density as being patterns that have outlived their time. Yesterday's highest truth might be today's density. Or we've identified it as that which the infinite is not. Or we have identified it of those who play their roles too long. When they're playing a role of mirroring illusion, okay, those illusions have been solved as of August 2006. We can all get off the treadmill now. So my brothers and sisters, this fluidity to be new each moment, like the water in a bend in a river, is to purify old passions of density moment by moment. Let's take a quick commercial break and we'll be right back.
Almine continues the exploration begun in her previous books, A Life of Miracles and Journey to the Heart of God, probing further into the nature and meaning of existence. Secrets of the Hidden Realms introduces the readers to the goddess mysteries as they apply not only to individual human lives, but to the cycles of the cosmos. From this background in the intangible functions of being, Almine is led into the dimensions of non-humans, interacting with creatures previously known only in myth and folklore, the inner relationships of fairies, dragons, gnomes, unicorns, and other elementals, and their influence on humankind is explained. Vivid accounts of encounters with these beings and others existing as expressions of the widely divergent vibrations illustrate the essential unity of all creation. Journeying from these subtle realms, the reader is shown the ultimate expression of humanity, evolution into God-being. Secret of the Hidden Realms can be obtained from Almine, along with her other books, CDs, workshops, lectures, and magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com. In this, the fourth book, The Ring of Truth, which chronicles Almine's journey, she tells of the promise and the potential inherent in the resurgence of the feminine principle, increasingly felt in all aspects of current human experience. The operation of new laws governing the cosmos are explained together with the reasons for their creation, we are introduced to Mother, the primal creative energy that pervades every aspect of existence. We learn of her love and her laws and how to incorporate them into every thought and act. We are given samples of her divine language, its meaning, and its power. Mother's great gift to humanity, the healing power of Elvispada, is revealed. This new approach to dissolving disease of mind, spirit, and body replaces previously existing methodologies. Application of its techniques removes old barriers of physically oriented existence and opens a broad pathway to a life of joy and fulfillment. Discover Mother and the Ring of Truth, as well as all of Almeen's books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
Welcome back. And over here, it's fascinating the way that our body speaks to us, isn't it? I hope I've made it clear, and any concepts that are a bit nebulous, please just jump in and ask me. Did you want to do any other anatomy, or did you want to go on to the next topic? It's entirely up to you.
Well, for the sake of completion, I think we should cover the hands as well. Certainly one hand in this episode.
All right, well, let's do the best we can. And everything was understandable so far, right?
Yes.
Okay, well, let's go straight to the hands then, and we'll start again on the left side. The left side is for me always an issue on my thumb. The thumb has been loyalty, relationship, partners of destiny. Left hand thumb. My brothers and sisters, over the eons of existence, light workers have pulled in flawed relationships up until August of 2006, when the cosmic poles reversed. It was inevitable, because opposite energy and opposite matter attracted. And so we were attracting people that would talk the same talk as we, they'd pretend to be on the same path as we. If they saw we were impeccable, which of course is what attracted them, because being opposite, they would talk the right talk, and then it was always so very bitterly disappointing. So we've just finished speaking about fluidity. It requires tremendous fluidity to understand that this no longer has to be the case. And we now are attracting others that make our hearts sing. So we can expect support and love and inspiration and all the things that we've had from others. Now, I will tell you this. This issue of relationship, my brothers and sisters, it also deals with relationship with the self. And we will, definitely get this finger prodding us into action when we are ignoring self-knowledge, self-love, self-respect, self-expression. So the partners of destiny, let's take a look at that. In fact, here, let's take our time with this, because you asked me a while ago to really speak about something on, I think it's YouTube, on soulmates and twin flames and so on.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, it's on iTunes, but...
It's on iTunes.
Yeah.
Do we need to tell them how to get there?
Well, it's your show on iTunes, also called The Mystical World We Live In.
Okay, that's, so they just look for Almeen?
Yeah, Almeen, or just the name of the show should do it.
Okay. Okay, well, then let's give you a little bit of information regarding this issue of twin flames, soulmates. My brothers and sisters, a great deal of confusion is created with these concepts. Let's take a look at the concept of soulmate. To the best of my knowledge, observing over years of working with Mother, the way that creation has taken place, it is so that during the ages when we were trying to solve illusion, which officially in the cosmos, Mother understood what she was and what she wasn't in August of 2006. And at that moment, when she understood, this is what my children are mirroring to me, and this is what I'm not, and this is what they're mirroring to me, and this is what I am. When that was totally solved in August of 2006, and we started to pull in worthy partners, a great many other things happened as well. And one of these pertains to the issue of soulmates. And we discussed this more fully in the video clip on iTunes, but let's scratch the surface. You see, to maximize opportunities to solve the issue of what is part of the perfection of the infinite and what is not, to solve it, there were instances where beings split themselves and lived several lives on Earth at once, or two lives on Earth at once, or one in the Pleiades, one here, who knows? And there was always this yearning for one's other self, particularly if that other self expressed as the opposite gender if you were heterosexual. So there was a yearning for this other part of you, feeling that you're not whole. This, because of how important Earth life is, it became the total pivot point of the ascension. Somewhere in 2006, I believe it was, Mother said that all lives lived anywhere else by beings that are here on Earth need to be pulled in and consolidated here on Earth. So in other words, if you had a male counterpart living in the Pleiades and you were here very much overpolarized into the feminine, you would have pulled the other part of you in, and suddenly you would have felt a lot more whole. A soulmate, if it means a split part of yourself, then there are no more soulmates. You know, if it means somebody that was a complement to you, well, then possibly we're talking more in terms of twin flames. But, my brothers and sisters, for eons and eons of living with twin flames that we have now been looking for, we need to consider the following. See, we attracted opposite matter and energy for trillions of years of existence, up until August of 2006, according to the Infinite Mother. Now, if we found the exact opposite of ourselves, they would have been the one that we would be the most in love with, and vice versa. So the strength of that relationship, because of the opposite poles attracting, would have been enormous. So, my brothers and sisters, this could be the doomed relationship, because it could have been very brief. It could have been that one of you died, it was never fully lived, so that you could find out that really this person was opposite to you, and the further the opposite is, the more uncomfortable it would have been. But, you know, if it was a Romeo and Juliet situation, you never had the time to find that out. And so you yearn for the strength of the feelings that you had. You see my point? So here we are, looking for our twin flame. If that flame was opposite to you and you were mirroring light, it is entirely possible that with the trillions of beings that were totally dissolved in what scriptures call the second death during the ascension of the cosmos and the planet, that they no longer exist, because you do. Next, what then would be your twin flame now? Same matter and energy now attracts. It would be a very comfortable place to be. It will not be somebody you've had eons of existence, of experience with, for the reasons that I've just given. But, my brothers and sisters, it will be a someone that you are the same with. And when you're together, you go, ah, there's just total peace. You touch each other and just feel expansion. That is the way it will be. And if it is same like that, you don't need to persuade them. You can certainly say, you know, I'm open to this relationship, but you do not need to explain yourself or persuade. The flirtatiousness and things like that, this is stuff of the past. It's fun to play, but this is stuff of the past in order to gain a mate. The phony games are not needed. When the sameness is there, there will be such powerful attraction, it will be totally self-evident. So, partners of destiny have changed. And that needs to be remembered, because so many hold on to an image or a memory of the soulmate. They remember that the strong attraction and the passionate love affair, like the Romeo and Juliet scenario. But if it was interrupted many lifetimes, you never had the time to find that out. And believe me, if you were with the same energies together today, you would be totally repelled by one another. Now, we have the second finger, another place where people, you know, tend to have a lot of problems. It's the one that I've mentioned as play, childlike innocence, and there's another piece of that I haven't mentioned, trickster and illusion. The image in the Mayan glyphs for trickster is monkey. In Native American teachings, it either is the Hehoka, which is the sacred clown. In the Norse teachings, it's the Loki, the sacred trickster. It's the jester in the old tarot traditions. And in Native medicine, it is called coyote teachings. Trickster, coyote. So we certainly can look at the issue of play and childlike innocence with that finger, my brothers and sisters, and the great importance that our child expresses, because it is the inner core of our being. We have spoken how these sub-personalities of the inner child, then the inner sage, then the inner nurturer, then the inner warrior, they actually lie in concentric circles. Well, you can imagine when your core isn't expressing, all the subsequent rings are affected. Your child needs time to play. You can play while you work. You can tease a coworker. You can put a funny card there that really makes you laugh. You know, you can just have a book of funny jokes for yourself or something to play with in your lunch hour. It can be worked into the workplace. It doesn't have to have these whole separate areas given. The entire trend is to unite what was separate. And the sub-personalities did not escape that. The sub-personalities are, in fact, supposed to, at this point, simultaneously express. You let your instinct guide you. You allow the inner child to play. And so on. While you're doing the adult work, while you're guarding your borders, while you're listening to the inner sage, they all happen simultaneously. Now, when we get back from these commercials, we will take a look at how Trickster teaches us.
The Complete Power Of and the Mystical Keys series of radio programs are a part of the Premier CD set. They are available from Al Mean at www.spiritualjourneys.com. Request the entire Premier CD series set or the new book, Aruba Farina, The Book of Fairy Magic, by calling 502-499-0016 today. The world of mysticism is yet another reason to rejoice. Al Mean has authored another manuscript of profound knowledge. It's entitled Opening the Doors of Heaven, Revelations of the Mysteries of Isis. Through a time travel tunnel linking Ireland and Egypt, Isis has sent a small group of masters to prepare for the day when the mysteries would once again be released to the world to restore balance and enhance life. They established the Order of the White Rose to guard the sacred objects and the secrets of Isis. In an unprecedented event heralding the advent of a
time of light, these mysteries are released for the very first time. Packed with truly thought-provoking information, this book is bound to have an indelible impression on not only the reader, but on global New Age philosophy. To reserve your copy of this groundbreaking work, go to www.spiritualjourneys.com or call 502-499-0016. After 3 months of intense physical preparation in January 2004, Almin experienced a transfiguration, entering the presence of the infinite for the second time since moving into God consciousness, the state of no longer identifying with the ego, in 2000. In the weeks that followed, the powerful revelations contained in this book emerged from that all-encompassing silence. Having lost most of the linear thinking during this transition, much of this book had been written without conscious thought. This form of automatic writing, like automatic speaking she now does, flows freely from source into her own handwriting from which it was transcribed. Few have entered into God consciousness to leave the bliss to teach. Still fewer enter the stage of immortal master and in addition continue to function among the masses. But as a Toltec Nahual and seer, Almin's life is dedicated to leading others to complete freedom from mortal boundaries. Journey to the heart of God is an opportunity of a lifetime to see through the eyes of one who has encountered the indescribable realms of eternity. From such a perspective come insights that can heal the deepest wounds of alienation found in human hearts. Journey to the heart of God contains, no matter how profound, truth. Truth that can be recognized for what it is, and it is the truth that shall set us free. Pick up a copy of The Journey to the Heart of God and discover your personal truth and freedom through Almin's books, CDs, workshops, lectures, and magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
Ruhir, is there anything? I know that I'm sort of on a monologue during the show, and you're possibly wondering what you're doing here, but believe me, you are needed. Is there anything that you wanted me to clarify with that?
Well, not really. I mean, I know you're now on the second finger, and you're going to talk about the trickster and illusion and the inner child in play, and we've had some already, you know, which you discussed before, that talking about relationships and twin flames, etc. And I just, when you were saying that, couldn't help thinking that would really be important to do more on this, maybe more audio podcasts or what, or something like it, because it's such an important topic, because there's so many people, certainly light workers out there, who've got this sort of impression of their partner out there, which has really been strengthened through years of dissension, but actually creates kind of a distorted image of what you know, lies in store for us. And I think what you were saying about it has really this sort of very healthy deprogramming effect that we should probably expand upon, because it's something that people need to really get, this principle.
And the other thing is, tick they are. They are so specific about exactly what that soulmate should look like. And the most beautiful people come in front of them and they're not open to it. That happens often.
Yeah.
So, okay, well, let's go on to look at trickster and illusion. Let's see exactly how the play and the childlike innocence and trickster and illusion happens. A child doesn't have to be taught that when the sun shines, their shadow falls on the ground and it follows them around. They chase their shadow around the bush a couple of times. They've got it. And it's experiential knowledge that won't go away. So, my brothers and sisters, we can play our way into learning. Illusion and trickster as a method of learning, being tricked into learning, can be unpleasant only when we take ourselves too seriously. So, if we take ourselves too seriously and we find that life is playing games with us, we get resistant. If we trust and we know that we know nothing, we have nothing to prove and everything to learn, We allow life to play with us. We loosen up, as Americans say. I love that saying. And so when we do that, growth becomes very, very effortless. In native traditions, it goes like this. The sacred clown does a lot of things backwards. It is very misunderstood, even by many Native Americans. I was privy to some very, very sacred Anishinaabe, Heihoka medicine man experiences. Very few people see that, even actually Native American people, because not all of the Native Americans still have that as an active part of their culture. There is an entirely different culture among Heihoka medicine men. And things are done backwards. Let's say, for instance, eagle feathers are absolutely revered by Native Americans. They are not to touch the ground. They are to be kept very sacred and safe. If then the sacred clown running around amongst the people, if he sees that they are careless with their eagle feathers, he might run up and take a sacred object and throw it right in the mud. And people are going, oh, how can he do that, Because he's tricking them through a little bit of shock treatment into seeing what they are not seeing for themselves. If he notices somebody standing there with sunglasses because really they want to wall up, they don't want to connect with their fellow man, so they don't want to make eye contact, he'll run, grab the sunglasses, put it on somebody else's face, then grab somebody else's sunglasses, put it on something else's face. It's just this big game, but it's a teaching moment through the game. It's a wonderful way for us to learn. It's also a great way for us to teach in terms of others. So, my brothers and sisters, let's take a look at the third finger in, which is influences, wisdom, and free will. What the important part there is are the terms manifestation and inevitability. The inevitability of life is the big template for all of creations. It's the big pattern according to which we function. What these templates are matrices. They're a matrix. And a matrix holds a screen in place, a stage play in place, an arena in place for the game of life to take place in. They're essential. We can't have individuated life without having some sort of matrix. So the big pattern will not allow anyone within that pattern to step out of it too far. And so, if that is the case, we're going against inevitability, the hard knocks start coming. But within that, we have much free will to write the way we want to play the character, which character we want to play. We've got all of that. All we have is a set and a stage and a bit of script. Beyond that, we have to ad lib. That's manifestation. Now, what this is signaling us is influences. Now, the influences will come from through the heart to guide us in the guidelines of the big picture, the inevitability. So we will feel it as an influence through the heart of this feels right, that doesn't feel right. We were just asked to do another radio show. It doesn't feel right. All of us working with it has this feeling. On the surface, it makes sense, but it doesn't feel right. So that's it doesn't fit the big picture. Now, the second, this issue of manifestation, how do you know what to manifest and what not? What makes you ecstatically happy? If you're walking your path following your heart, my brothers and sisters, when it makes your heart sing, you have just lived your highest truth in terms of that which you want to manifest for your own life. We have the next finger, which is to explore. wakefulness, pierce the veil. This is a magnificent finger, because this finger, which is the ring finger on your left hand, deals with the fact that as humans, we can evolve the cosmos in a way no other species can, and I don't need to say much on this, because this is the place where we find the unknowable, something that has never before been known. And you can check out the archives. We have discussed this one a lot. So go back and listen to it again. We speak about the unknowable as being that which we have never been known before. This finger will tell us when we need to explore something further. The explorer is wakeful because they're in uncharted territory. But when this finger signals, by golly, you are right in front of the veil, and beyond it lies completely uncharted country. The little pinky is for receptivity and timelessness. It's the place of living with full attention to the now, ready and waiting to be delighted with the moment. Thank you for joining us, my brothers and sisters. We've got to dash, and we'll be with you again next week.
We hope you've enjoyed today's show, Windows into Eternity with Al Mean. Please join us again next week.